It's one of the most frustrating storylines of these economic times that despite high unemployment, American companies say they have the jobs, but they can't find the right workers to fill them. This so-called skills gap has been widely reported. One recent study of the manufacturing sector said 600,000 jobs are still open and waiting, while another survey of all U.S. firms finds that half say it's becoming increasingly difficult to find qualified candidates and fill vacancies. In New Hampshire, business groups, academics, and the media have all picked up on this idea of a skills gap as well. In fact, we've done several shows on the topic here on The Exchange. But our guest today tells a different story. He says the skills gap is a myth, that the real problem is employers themselves holding unrealistic expectations about how much experience applicants should have and unwilling to train perfectly good candidates. We're talking this hour with Peter Capelli, a professor of management at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business. His new book is called Why Good People Can't Get Jobs, The Skills Gap and What Companies Can Do About It. Today in The Exchange, a skeptic on the skills gap. Let's hear from you. If you're an employer, do you see the skills gap in your industry? And do you yourself struggle to find the right workers? Do you feel you have the time and the money to get new workers up to speed? And on the job-seeking side, if you're looking for work, do you think companies today are too picky, waiting for that perfect person while jobs go unfilled? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And Professor Capelli joins us from the University of Pennsylvania. And Professor Capelli, great to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Well, so what does the conventional wisdom say about the skills gap? And then we'll get into all your arguments about why this conventional wisdom is wrong. But go ahead.
You know, the usual story goes like this, that employers can't find the people they need for the jobs that are open. The reason for that is because the applicants don't have enough smarts or enough academic skills, and the reason for that is that schools are failing, right? So that's the usual story. And the reason it gets so much attention is that it's got a man-bites-dog aspect to it, right? If you had a story you were trying to run that said qualified applicant can't find a job, nobody would be particularly surprised by that, given that we're in the worst economic situation since the Great Depression. But a story about employers having jobs and can't fill them gets a lot of news. So that's the conventional wisdom.
Well, and the conventional wisdom backed up by studies and surveys done by reputable business organizations, Manpower Group, the Manufacturing Institute, media sources like the Washington Post. What do you think, Professor Capelli? Are all these people flat out wrong, or are they just pointing to the wrong culprit? What do you think?
Well, actually, there aren't any studies showing this. What there are surveys asking employers what the problem is. So the problem with all this kind of, these studies, which are not really, as I say, studies, not really research, is they ask employers what their experience is. And the employers, by the way, are not bad guys in this, and it's not that they are necessarily wrong in what they are saying. What they're saying is, we can't find the people we want to hire. And then the skills gap is their interpretation as to why. So their interpretation as to why we can't find people we want is because there's something wrong with the market. And if you think how odd that is, imagine me telling you that I'm out looking for a car and I can't find the one that I want, therefore there's a car shortage, which is exactly what they're saying, right? That's exactly what they're saying. So just to back up a little bit on why this isn't true. First, on this issue, if we work backwards in the chain of logic from they can't find to the problems, academic skills, to schools are failing, you know, schools are not failing. If you look at high schools in the U.S., high school student performance has gone slowly up. You might say not fast enough, which certainly could be true, but for about the last 20 years, things have been trending slowly up on most of the measures that we can think are credible ones. It's also probably fair to note that the schools that are failing are not all schools, right? It's the lowest tier. The upper tier is as good as any place in the world. It's the bottom tier that's the problem. But the average still is going up. When you survey employers and ask them, what are the skills you're having problems with, they never say academic skills. They're always down around 10th or 15th in recent surveys on the list of their concerns. What they're concerned about is the same thing employers have been concerned about for generations. And probably if you went back to ancient Greece, you'd see the same story. And the story is kids don't show up on time. They're not conscientious. They don't take their work seriously enough. And, you know, that's a problem, frankly, of 20-year-olds. It's not unique to this period.
Old people griping about young people.
Yeah, and, you know, it may be true, but it's always been true, and it's not clear we're going to turn 18-year-olds into mental 30-year-olds. You know, it's a very difficult thing to imagine how you do. The issue that's most important is why employers can't find what they're looking for, and that requires a little more thought about how the hiring process works. And basically, the story here is most people assume that hiring is like a company is sort of like a machine. You're missing a part. It's very clear what the part is. You go to the store. You buy that part. You put it in.
The right? Home Depot model. And that's what you call it.
Yeah, yeah, sort of the Home Depot model. You're going to the store. You're picking out the part. You're plugging it in. Hiring doesn't work like that at all. Right? The first issue is what a job actually requires changes a lot. Across employers and depending on the labor market. So one of the things we know is that when, and we know this from real research, that when the labor market gets soft, as it is now, employers understandably get more picky and job requirements rise. When the labor market gets tight, job requirements fall because they want to get somebody in and they're not so picky. So for example, if you look at the IT boom in the U.S. in the 1990s, the whole Silicon Valley IT boom, only 10% of the IT workers at that point in time in the 1990s had any academic degree in IT. These are people who were largely self-trained. It seemed to work, you know, absolutely fine. So what they want is something which is within their control. And part of the reason, frankly, that they're not finding what they want now is they're understandably spending a lot of time searching because there are so many candidates.
Right? They're overwhelmed by the numbers. And, you know, I want to ask you a couple more questions about this, Professor Capelli, but let me also invite our listeners again to join us. The number for you to come in with your questions and comments on this skills gap is 1-800-892-6477. And as we're hearing, this mismatch has been widely reported. Supposedly, while many Americans want jobs, companies say they have the right position, they have positions, but they can't find the right people to fill them. What do you think about this? If you're an employer, do you see a skills gap in your industry? If you're out there looking for work, do you think employers have gotten too picky about who they hire? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. So, Professor Capelli, you're saying it makes sense that in a period of high unemployment, lots of people looking for jobs, yes, companies can get more picky. Are you saying in this book they've gotten too picky, they've gone overboard with being fussy, and they shouldn't be complaining about a skills gap if they've gotten so fussy? Is that what you're saying?
I think that's part of what's going on, and I think we might just talk just a little bit more about why they get fussy and why it makes sense to search. You know, some people, including some of these employers groups, say, you know, there are thousands of jobs out there that are vacant. Well, you know, there are always thousands of jobs that are vacant because companies are searching, right? Even if they search and fill a job in a week, there is still a week where there's a vacancy. So there's always jobs that are vacant. And the fact that they're vacant doesn't mean there aren't good candidates out there. But I think what employers are doing now is a couple of things. One is the requirements have gotten ridiculous. So I heard from a company that told me they had 29,000 applicants for an engineering position, and none of them were rated as qualified. Well, how could that be? I talked to another company yesterday, and they told me, this is in the human resource department, that they were really having a hard time with the line managers who were asking for more and more experience, more and more credentials, and the people weren't out there. And the other part of that is that employers, frankly, don't want to pay for the quality of people that they're looking for. So a question I almost always ask employers when they say they can't find somebody is they say, well, and I say, have you tried raising your wages? And they say, well, we can't do that. Mm. Or they say, I'm already paying enough. Well, you know, the problem with the market is we don't get to decide how much I pay for a car. Employers don't get to decide how much they pay for labor. There's a market, and the market sets the rates. And if you're not paying enough, you're not going to find the people.
So I think in terms of this experience, too, you make the case in the book pretty strongly that companies really want experience. It's that frustrating thing that young people deal with when they graduate from college. Everybody wants experience, but how can you get experience if no one will hire you? There was even a story about somebody wanting experience running a cotton candy machine, right? I mean, this shows you how hard it's gotten.
Yep. A cotton candy machine job requirement said must have demonstrated prior success operating cotton candy machines. And, you know, it's not a particularly high-skilled job. But that's a great point that what employers want, for the most part, remember there are 26 million businesses in the U.S., so there's a lot of variation. What they're asking for and what they find difficult to find is somebody with job experience already. They don't want to train anybody. They want to hire somebody who can step right into the job. And what that means in practice is that they've done exactly that job already. That's how they decide that the person could do this job. And they also don't want to hire anybody who's unemployed because those people they think maybe have rusty skills or maybe there was some reason why they didn't keep their job. So they're creating a crisis. They're creating a shortage by saying, here's what we want, and what we want is somebody doing exactly the same job right now at one of our competitors. Oh, and by the way, we probably aren't going to pay very much to get them, and we can't find those people.
Although, you know, given how tight everything is in the workplace, you know, people are so busy just doing their daily work, it's hard to blame employers for wanting to hire someone with experience. Everybody's too busy to take time out to train the new guy or gal, you know? I mean, it sounds great, do some training, but who's going to do it? Everybody's, you know, so busy already.
Well, I think that's right, but I think the next step is the issue. So if you say, okay, we want to hire these people, we can't pay them very much, we're not finding them, what do we do, right? And I think the problem is, if you think about maybe you or I shopping for a car, and we want a car with lots of horsepower and lots of space and great mileage and all these sorts of things, and we want to pay $20,000 and we don't find it, what do? Do we just throw up our hands and call the legislator in our state and say there's something wrong with the car market, or do we say we better compromise and maybe train people or maybe raise our wage price a bit?
Yeah, look at what we are expecting and see if we need to alter those expectations. We've got some calls coming in, Professor Capelli, and after a short break, we'll hear from our listeners at 1-800-892-6477, and we'll talk more about the myth of the skills gap. Stay with us.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. NHPR is excited to announce Radiolab now has a permanent home in the Granite State. You can now hear Radiolab every week as it grapples with the mystery of science and the magic of real life. Radiolab Fridays at noon here on NHPR. New Hampshire weather for today, mostly sunny with some low humidity, highs ranging from 75 from the White Mountains north and along the seacoast, 80 to 85 degrees for the rest of the state. Tonight, clear, comfortable, lows near 50 in the North Country, 55 to 60 in the rest of the state. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Bruss Construction, transforming New Hampshire's existing buildings into energy-efficient, occupant-friendly environments. Information at brussconstruction.com. And from Woodstock Inn Station and Brewery, offering its White Mountain Variety Ale Collection in 22-ounce bottles, now available at local stores. WoodstockInnNH.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with the author of a new book called Why Good People Can't Get Jobs. It looks at the much-discussed skills gap, whether it really exists, and if it does, who's responsible for it. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. If you're a business owner, we'd love to hear from you. Do you see a skills gap in your industry? Have you struggled to find the right people to fill jobs? On the other end, if you've been looking for work, what's your take on this issue of the skills gap? Do you think companies have become overly picky, waiting for a perfect applicant to walk through the door? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Professor Capelli, here's a couple emails that have come in. One from Judith I'd like to share with you. She says, totally agree with your guest. In my experience as an HR professional, I see employers who want an employee who fits a very exact set of skills. And if you have 9 of the 10 skill sets, you are rejected. I was at a recent conference where one employer was complaining that they had good-paying jobs that didn't require a college education but couldn't find applicants. When asked if they were reaching out to area high schools, they said no. Judith says, seems simple to me. If you need employees, go find them. If you can't find them, create them, i.e. train them. What do you think about this, Professor Capelli?
Well, you know, it is an interesting point that the data on recruiting suggests that it's dropped off a cliff, that employers are spending much less now trying to find applicants than they did, you know, before the recession. And maybe that's understandable, but it would also make sense if you had a hard time that you would spend more time, you know, actually recruiting. I think, you know, this issue of the perfect applicant is also a bit of a myth, because we really don't know that having somebody who meets all those boxes performs better than people who only meet some of them. And this takes us to another quirk about modern hiring, and that is that most employers of any size now use computers and software to make the decisions for them, partly because so many people are applying for jobs now, and partly because in the 90s, employers who were short of people tried to make it easier to apply. They get thousands of applicants for every opening now, and there's no way they can humanly go through them all and make assessments. So they turn it over to software. And software is not very smart. Software is really sort of a digital process. Yes, no, yes, no. Do you have this experience? Do you have that credential? That's pretty much all it's good at assessing, right? So they end up actually building these gates into software. Do you have this? Do you have this? And by the way, the first gate in almost every hiring software is asking, what wage are you looking for? And if you guess too high, you're kicked out as an unqualified applicant.
Even though you might be willing to negotiate or talk about it or take that compensation in some other form.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
And you might not have exactly the same job title as the position in question. One person told me that they were told afterwards that that was the reason they didn't get hired, and it turned out the job title the company was looking for only existed in that company, but nobody had bothered to figure that out, you know. So once you start stacking up a bunch of these hurdles, say the odds are 50%, you clear one hurdle and 50% you clear the second hurdle. That means you combine those, so the odds of clearing both are 25%. You put 10 hurdles in a row, the odds on clearing all 10 are 1 in 1,000. So part of what's happening here is that, you know, these software systems, if you don't use them right, and most employers don't use them just to supplement hiring, they use them to drive the whole process, end up screening out people who could do the jobs.
Well, and talking about technology, we hear a lot about employers using social media, looking at your Facebook, looking at your tweets, you know, sort of looking at your online profile. Maybe you had a stupid party when you were a teenager and you got into trouble, and, you know, they can find out about that now.
That's true. And, you know, you're adding multiple hurdles when you get picky and you're saying, you know, we don't want anybody who might be the least bit questionable as a job applicant. And again, the assumption is that all these things matter, but we don't know that they matter to job performance. And as far as I know, there's no evidence that they do. And that ends up being a big issue. Related issue is the second question, which is an internal accounting question, and that is most employers have no idea what it costs them to keep a position vacant.
It looks good on the bottom line. It's vacant.
It looks good on the bottom line, and so therefore they're really not in any rush to fill the positions because they don't think it's costing them anything to keep them open. And so, you know, why not be picky? Why not wait around? Now, we know from careful studies that it costs a lot to keep positions open. The costs end up appearing later on, but some, you know, lost business opportunities, work that doesn't get done, people who are burned out. And we know those costs are real, but they're not short-term costs. So part of what's driven this whole problem is the short-term orientation of most businesses, especially those that are publicly listed companies where they obsess about quarterly performance, where they actually think it looks good not to fill vacancies. So that is another reason why they don't get filled.
So the cost of the vacancy doesn't appear on the bottom line. The cost of leaving it open looks good on the bottom line.
Right, right. And so if you're saying, gee, should we train somebody? Should we raise our wages? No, let's just keep looking.
All right. Well, Judith, thanks for the email. And again, the email address is exchange@nhpr.org. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Professor Capelli, lots of calls. And let's go first to Chris in Laconia. Hi, Chris. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead. You're on the air. Chris in Laconia. Yeah, go ahead.
You're doing a great job. The discussion is really interesting. Question for you, though. How much experience do you have as an employer?
Oh, you mean have I hired people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, I've hired people.
Yeah. Go ahead, Chris. You're coming at this from the employer perspective. Is that right?
So the question is how much experience. The critique that's been made of professors for a while in universities is that they teach the subject that they've never participated in, and by that measure they're somewhat distracted from subject, and the employer then says, well, we have people teaching our students who haven't actually done the job, so how could we expect a high caliber candidate?
Well, so, Chris, what's your thought on this?
Well, I've been an employer for 24 years.
Yeah.
And we seem to have more difficulties with finding employees who fit a more rigorous program. You know, these days we have so many government agencies that will tell us that you have to do this and you have to do that, and if you have a critique over something, it has to be a certain way in a certain format. In the practice of medicine and when you train in medicine, you don't find that situation. People are very dogmatic and people are very totalitarian, and you get the job done because you're told you're going to do it. That's not the case as an employer. As an employer, you sort of coddle your employees.
So are you saying, Chris, that things have gotten more complicated, government regulations and so forth, and so given that complexity, you're having more difficulty these days finding employees who can do it? Is that what you're saying?
Well, not so much finding them, but finding people who are willing to do the learning and step into the job with the idea that there's stuff to be learned, and yes, we'll learn it, and take on an attitude that's very progressive.
And what business are you in, if I may ask, Chris?
Practicing medicine.
You're practicing in medicine. Okay, yeah. Well, thank you for calling in, and just hold on a second, if you could, Chris. And Professor Capelli, what do you think? He's challenging what you say. He's saying, look, it's tough.
Well, I think it is tough. I mean, just back to the general point about teaching, though, you know, I think the way teaching and research goes is that we're not commenting on our personal experience. We're commenting based on research. So, you know, people who teach history, that doesn't mean they lived through the 17th century. That means they studied what people wrote in the 17th century, and they're reporting what the preponderance of evidence says with respect to studies and things. So, you know, I think, is it hard to be an employer? Of course it's hard to be an employer, but what the issue is we're talking about now is whether it really is true that employers can't find the people they're looking for, whether there's something happening on the supply side that has suddenly caused people to be unemployable, which is the claim. And as far as I can see from actual research on this, as opposed to simple anecdotes and interpretations from employers, it's simply not true. By the way, the interpretation from employers basically is saying, it's not my fault, it's nothing I'm doing. And we know that those judgments are very hard to make for an employer to say, you know, gee, maybe I could train people, maybe I could actually recruit more, maybe I could raise my wages. It's easier to say, no, nothing I'm doing, it's probably the market.
Although, what about employers like our caller who've been in the field for a long time and do have that historical perspective, you know, that it used to be easier, now it's harder? You know, he's speaking from experience here.
Well, it's one person's experience. And I can tell you that I was in the Labor Department in the Reagan administration, and employers were complaining in the 1980s about exactly the same thing they're complaining about now. And that is, people don't want to work, they don't show up in time, they don't have the right attitude. And one of the things we know is that as people get older, they complain more about people who are younger. And it's the same complaints we've heard for generations. And as we said earlier, my guess is if you went back to ancient Greece and Rome, you'd hear the same complaints there. You know, people don't want to work hard, they're not committed. And it's probably true that if you're hiring young people, that's what you find.
All right. Well, Chris, thank you for joining us. And our number again is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. And Professor Capelli, let's go back to our callers. Karen's calling from Laconia. Hi, Karen, you're on the air.
Hi. My comment was, or question, I guess, is about how this affects older job seekers as well. Having been, in the last couple of years, gone through a period of unemployment, and now I'm working 2 and 3 part-time jobs, and I'm 59 years old, I found that even though I had a long employment history, wide range of skills, college-educated, very trainable, I find that the job descriptions very often have very high requirements or very specific requirements, even if they're part-time jobs, which prevents people from starting part-time and working into full-time if they don't have that specific set of skills. And my impression was that employers thought that older workers maybe couldn't develop the new skills or update. Mm-hmm. But older workers also have more of a work ethic, and you know, that we're more trained to show up and do the job. So
those other
that's
skills, yeah, that employers say they want. Karen, thanks for the call, and I just want to follow up with that. We got an email from Scott, who also is talking about this. He says, the year is the elephant in the room, ageism. Many people I know can't find work because they feel they're being discriminated against because of their age. I'm convinced employers want younger, cheaper workers who don't require higher wages, health benefits, etc., and this is more important than experience. Problem is, older workers can't help their age, and often they have to provide for their families. Employers need to stop being cheap. So, Scott, thank you also for that email. Go ahead, Professor Capelli, on Karen and Scott's point.
Well, it just so happens I wrote another book a year or so ago called Managing the Older Worker. And the point that the listeners are raising is really an interesting and puzzling one. What employers say they want are people who have the experience, especially, right? Not just academic skills, but the experience doing the jobs. They want people who are conscientious. They want people who don't need a lot of direction. And that perfectly describes experienced older workers. So you would expect in this context that employers would be snapping up older workers, but they're not. In fact, you know, the unemployment experience of older workers seems to be worse now by a lot than it was a generation or so ago. That's partly because lots of older workers, more people got laid off. But why is it that employers are not snapping these folks up? And the listeners are exactly right that it's age discrimination, and there's tons of it, and there's lots of evidence for it. The reason we think, my co-author and I think, that we're seeing so much of this age discrimination is because younger supervisors now are in the unusual position of having to hire or look at applicants of people who are older and more experienced than they are. And they're really insecure and nervous about hiring somebody and having to supervise somebody who's had more experience doing the same work than they have. And so as a result, they just say, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And the assumption that older workers can't be trained, that's a big one. You hear that a lot. There's no evidence for it. But, you know, again, it's discrimination.
Well, getting back to training for a moment, and again, your book, Why Good People Can't Get Jobs, does take a pretty heavy hit against employers saying they're not willing to train perfectly good applicants. Here's a question for you, though, Professor Capelli. Some employers are leery of investing too much time and resources into training because workers move around a lot these days. You invest time, you invest energy, you invest money getting them up to speed, and then 2 years later they're gone.
That's certainly true, but let's be clear about why they're gone. They're gone in almost every case because another employer hires them away. What causes this problem is employers are doing it to each other. Now, that doesn't mean that employers who do this are bad, and it certainly doesn't mean that employers who worry about this are making mistakes. It is a real issue for employers. The question is kind of, what are we going to do about this? Now, we know that there are ways to train people and not lose the investments. There are ways to train people and make it work. Apprenticeship programs, for example, have done this forever. If you look at professional service firms, if you look at law firms, for example, that hire associates, they make money actually doing that, as do accounting firms and hospitals, right, as well. They hire interns and they train them, but they make money off them as they train them. So there are ways to do it. I think the problem in most companies is that over the last decade, they've largely gutted their human resource functions. So they don't have a training department anymore. And the option for them to train seems to be pretty daunting. By the way, they've also gotten rid of most of their recruiters. So there's nobody to push back on line management and say, you know, do you really need a PhD to do this job? Do you really need 10 years experience? So there's nobody pushing back. There's nobody to look at the resumes and say, you know, this person doesn't have exactly the same job on their resume, but they have two prior jobs that together amount to the same thing. So there's nobody to do that. And, you know, to some extent, this is all a consequence of being penny-wise and pound-foolish around human resources.
Let's go back to our callers again. The number 1-800-892-6477. Post a comment on our Facebook page or send us an email. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. And Professor Capelli, up next is Catherine in Manchester. Thanks for calling in, Catherine. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to make two comments. One was they were talking about age discrimination, and my husband, who was laid off for 18 months, there is another discrimination against unemployed people. I think that he wouldn't get a lot of interviews because they wouldn't look at him because he was unemployed. But when he did get interviews, which he did get plenty of them, and being in upper management, he would interview with 3 to 4 people each time. Each time he interviewed with a different person, they had different expectations of what they thought that job should be, being it was stuff that they wanted to put on this person or whatever, and it would get totally confusing, and they would always either resubmit the job or re-advertise it or table the job because everyone had a different idea of what the job would entail.
So they need to get their act together first, Catherine. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was just, it would happen probably 10, 12 times.
Really? Wow.
Ridiculous.
What do you think, Professor Capelli? Catherine, thanks for the call.
Yeah, there's sort of 2 points there. This second point is about, employers internally not understanding or not agreeing about what the job requirements are about. You see that a lot. And again, it's one of those consequences, largely, I think, of gutting human resources. There's nobody there to handle the search. They don't have a professional recruiter to do this. They fob it off to the line managers and maybe their direct reports. They feel they don't have time to put this together, so at the last minute, they're just using their judgments. And by the way, we know from research on this that that's absolutely just about the worst way to hire people, is to pop from interview to interview to interview across people who haven't put their heads together about what they want. The earlier point, which is an important one, I think, is this issue of discrimination against people who are unemployed. And this is a fact. Employers admit it. A lot of employers now on their websites have posted that, we're not taking applicants from people who are unemployed. Again, the issue here is, do we really have any evidence that people who are unemployed perform worse? Or, you might argue that people who are unemployed are really hungry, really motivated, and are more likely to do a good job. So, without evidence that these folks are not going to do well, we're talking again just about prejudice.
All right. Well, Catherine, thanks for the call. And we'll take more of your questions and comments after a short break. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And when we come back, more with Peter Capelli, author of Why Good People Can't Get Jobs.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from PSNH, sponsor of ABI Innovation Hub's Accelerate New Hampshire program, helping new entrepreneurs get started with resources and mentorship. Information at abihub.org. And from Ellen's Interiors, New London, with an historic and modern display of William Morris designs. Information at ellensinteriors.com, now with an office in Cambridge. This is NHPR.
Today, Word of Mouth presents the TED Radio Hour from NPR. It's a journey through fascinating ideas, some astonishing inventions, and fresh approaches to old problems. Join host Allison Stewart in conversation with speakers stepping off the stage of the TED Conference. We'll hear about their inspirations, challenges, and innovative approaches to finding solutions. That's the TED Radio Hour, ideas worth spreading, today at noon on Word of Mouth from NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, our guest is Peter Capelli, and he's the author of a new book called Why Good People Can't Get Jobs, The Skills Gap and What Companies Can Do About It. Peter Capelli is a professor of management at the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania and director of its Center for Human Resources. We're taking your questions and comments on this skills gap, why Peter Capelli says businesses need to look in the mirror when it comes to this. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Professor Capelli, let's go right back to our callers. Peter's joining us from Franconia. Hi, Peter. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. The prior caller, he was a doctor, and I'm also a professional. I'm a lawyer and certified public accountant. And quite simply, I have seen in the past instances where there's a misunderstanding of a profession. In my case, I'm a tax lawyer or transactional lawyer, and I've seen advertisements for positions where an employer is asking for, let's say, a mergers and acquisitions lawyer, and at the same time they want someone who is a litigator. And in my 20 years of experience, those two people don't exist. And this would be the same thing as someone asking for a radiologist and a thoracic surgeon. I sort of wonder if whether it's a lack of HR or someone writing a job description who doesn't understand what the technical person, be it an engineer, lawyer, doctor, does.
Wow. Okay, Peter, thanks for calling in. And you mentioned the legal profession, actually, Professor Capelli, earlier as an example of closing the skills gap. But go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, law firms have a model of training that makes some sense. But I think the caller's point you see a lot. The reason this happens is because companies are trying to consolidate positions, right? And in the downturn, sometimes they, you know, have been able to do it. They get one person to do the jobs that two people were doing before. And, you know, that's not a terrible thing if it turns out that they can do it. Then that person leaves, and then they say, okay, we're going to fill this vacancy now. We want somebody who has the prior experience doing both of these jobs. And you don't see that. Where this problem exists especially is in the world of information technology, where there are these different specialties, and you see, you know, employers asking for more and more sets of experience, and often experiences that you're not going to see exist in nature, right? So they don't find them, and then they say, well, there's something wrong.
Well, many look to the community colleges to fill this training gap that you talked about. And when we've talked about the skills gap on the exchange, we've heard people say the community colleges need to do a better job. The system of higher education needs to do a better job. What about the community colleges where so many are looking to as the solution? What's an appropriate role for these institutions, and what isn't, Professor Capelli?
Yeah. Before we get to precisely that, let's be clear, though, that most employers are not looking to hire people right out of school. The jobs that are hard to fill are the ones where they want 3 to 5 years experience. And the reason they want that is there are all these sort of tacit skills that you learn best only by doing. And what that means is that there are a lot of things that you just can't learn in a traditional classroom setting, right? It's very difficult to learn how to be a welder, for example, in a traditional classroom setting. You know, you really have to get out there and practice. And you can learn some of those things in settings like community colleges, but not all of them. The things to remember about the community colleges right now is they are absolutely jammed with people doing exactly what everybody thinks should be done, and that is go back to school and see if they can get new skills. The problem is that the state budgets are all being hit. They're cutting back on community college funding at exactly the time that the they're being overwhelmed by people who already have degrees, often bachelor's degrees or higher, trying to come back into community colleges. And I think, you know, pushing the problem off onto community colleges or, to schools in general just is not going to work, because there's only so much of this stuff you can learn in school. And again, that's not what the shortage is about. Just to give you a couple of quick examples on that, the nursing schools now have been jammed for a while, and most employers in the healthcare industry report now, frankly, that the nursing shortage is over.
Right.
I've got a son who did exactly this. He has a degree in classics. Not surprisingly, he couldn't find a job, and he went back to community college and got one of these healthcare certificates in a field that was supposed to be hot, and it turns out when he graduated, the field is jammed, that they won't hire anybody who doesn't have prior experience doing it. They don't want to hire anybody right out of school.
So it isn't about specific skills that you learn in community college? So what is their role then if it isn't about teaching specific skills?
Well, I think that is it, but that's about all they can do. So assuming that the problem of unemployment, or at least a big part of the problem, is that there aren't enough people with those skills that community colleges provide, first is not right. That isn't where the big shortfall is. Employers really want people who already got experience. And the second issue which relates to that is community colleges can't provide that part of it. They can't provide easily the on-the-job, hands-on experience, which is what employers say they want. So there's only so much community colleges can do. They could do more of it if we gave them more money. But, you know, they're doing just about everything that could be done right now.
So apprenticeships, internships, training, you're saying don't look at community colleges to solve all your problems. You need to take on some of this yourself, employers.
Yeah, and I think for employers, the reason to do this right now is because it would actually save you money. I'm not suggesting that employers do anything just for the social good here. It just seems not to be working for them. If you can't find people and you've got positions that are vacant and you say it's hurting you, then you ought to be able to do something about it. And the things that you could do about it might actually save you money. It's cheaper, for example, in many cases, to take somebody who's almost qualified and give them a little training, give them a little ramp-up time. By the way, there's nothing that prevents you from paying them less while they're learning. That's what lawyers do in law firms. That's what they do with doctors in healthcare. You could pay them less while they're learning. It's also how apprenticeship systems work. That's probably going to be cheaper than chasing those few people who are currently doing the jobs at your competitors and trying to hire those people.
Let's take another call. This is Steve in Portsmouth. And Steve, thanks for waiting. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much, Laura. Yeah, I wanted to call up and thank your guest. He's making some extraordinarily good points that I don't think people are aware of today. The bottom line clearly is there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands or more, of certainly in the technical sector and in other sectors of the economy that are highly skilled, highly qualified, are educated, and simply want to work. But companies just don't seem to have the internal structure to be able to understand that if you go and you apply, they can't understand that you in fact have the skills. And it's just hard for well, I have a lot of things to say, but I'll try to keep it quick regarding this specific point. It's so sad because if the end result is companies claiming they can't find people when there's so many people out there that need jobs, that is a big problem. But I also find another thing they do is they'll quickly revert to, they'll say, certainly in the technical sector, they'll say, well, we can't find anyone who meets this long litany of skills as, you know, the professor and some other callers alluded to. There are all these, in many cases, inane litany of skills which have very little relevance or weren't even compiled in a logical manner. Then they'll say, okay, well, let's just go to someone who supplies all these H-1B visas or, you know, and they'll in the tech sector and in software, they'll very often use outsourced foreign national labor.
You know, Steve, this is a point we really should talk about, so I'm glad you brought it up. Boy, we've been hearing off and on for years, Professor Capelli, look, we can't find the people here in America, so let's open up the H-1B visas, as Steve mentioned, and get folks from abroad who do have these skills. This is very controversial. What do you think, Professor Capelli?
Here's one of the reasons why it's controversial, folks might want to know. When you come in on an H-1B visa, you are pretty much tied to the employer who brought you in. If you leave that employer, you have to go back and leave the country. So some people think, you know, this is almost like indentured servitude. There's no doubt that it puts a lot more pressure on the worker and it puts a lot of control in the hands of the employer. And the wages tend to be lower for these folks when they come in, and possibly that's the reason they can't participate in the labor market. So it makes people suspicious when they see that employers are arguing that we need these people because they can see why these folks are advantageous to employ. When you look at the studies on H-1B visas, you know, and the need for them, there's not a lot of evidence, frankly, that the need is overwhelming. A lot of people seem to argue or think that the folks coming in on H-1B visas are the superstars from other countries. That turns out rarely to be the case, that the average person coming in IT on these H-1B visas is kind of a mid-level person, so not folks at the top. But, you know, on the other hand, it's very hard to know what individual employers' experience really is. And, you know, it ends up being a hotly contested issue. There is no doubt, though, that there are lots of people in the U.S. who, with perhaps a little training and a little experience, could do all the jobs that people with H-1B visas are taking right now.
Here's an email that came in from Woody in Bradford. He says, I believe another skills gap exists today. When senior management baby boomers retire from the workforce, an internal skills gap develops. Employers are faced with the challenge today of training internal employees or external candidates for senior level positions. Would your guest like to comment? You talk about this in the book, Professor Capelli, the benefits, you say, of hiring from within, training from within.
Well, I think that's exactly right. You know, and those of us who are old enough to remember a generation ago when all these internal positions at the top of a company would be filled from within, and then we went to a situation where maybe most of them were filled from within, and now we're getting to a position in a lot of companies where none of them are filled from within. So the latest data from the applicant tracking software companies that manage the data on vacancies for their clients suggests that companies are filling about two-thirds of all their vacancies from the outside. And a generation ago, that figure was 10%. So companies are not growing talent from within for these senior management jobs. They're hiring from each other. But the problem is, if everybody does this, which seems to be happening, who trains those managers? Who develops them? And I think we've got a big national problem with respect to that, right? Nobody wants to train. Nobody wants to develop. Everybody wants to hire somebody who's already got those skills. Now, I should say, sitting in a business school, we benefit enormously from this because you need an MBA now because no employer is going to provide those skills and that training to you, even though they did a generation ago.
What about global competition? I mean, you're talking about all these efforts that you say are penny wise and pound foolish, but, you know, from the employer end, boy, the global competition is tough, and maybe we didn't have that 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it continues to raise the issue, though, about whether we're being penny-wise and pound-foolish. That would matter to global competition as well. You know, if you're doing something that you think is saving you money and it's actually costing you money, that makes you in worse shape. One of the things that we do know, surprise a lot of people, though, particularly in these management jobs, is that the rates of pay are going up sharply in our competitors around the world where we thought were cheap labor companies. So our countries, rather. In India, for example, and in China, management jobs, at least in the bigger companies, are paying at the U.S. rates. Wages in China are going up at about 20% a year for hourly employees. And the gap that that causes, you know, the wage gap, is not as big as you would think. In the auto industry, for example, labor costs are about 15% of total costs. U.S. productivity is much higher than it is in China, and wages are rising fast in China and other countries. So the gap associated with lower wages in these countries is becoming less and less of an issue.
I've got a couple emails here, Professor Capelli, from recent college graduates. Here's one from Ben. He says, I feel like I fall directly into the category of skilled but without experience. I majored in English and philosophy, graduated summa, and had a fair share of extracurricular activities. I have strong analytical communication and comprehension capabilities, but it sounds like that means little if I do not have direct experience in a field. Ben, it's tough. I feel for you. Go ahead, Professor Capelli.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, this is a consequence of a down market. I mean, we can't blame the employers for this. There just aren't enough jobs to go around, and employers, understandably, are looking for the people who can make contributions faster and don't have to be trained as much. There is one thing I do want to talk about on these academic issues, though, is this notion that you know, we don't have enough college graduates. The average American is way overqualified for the jobs they're doing right now in terms of academic skills and academic credentials. And that gap has been growing. And so, you know, a lot of the calls we seem to be hearing that we need more people to go to college, you know, you have to ask yourself, for what problem is that a solution for, right? So would we actually be better off if we had more people with more college education? I don't think so. I think certainly employers would prefer if we had more people with even more practical education. But, you know, students have been shifting in that direction for a long time anyway. The most popular major in the U.S. by far, and it's been true for quite a while now, is business. And there are at least twice as many business majors as there are liberal arts majors in the U.S. And we're getting increasingly vocational education programs in college. In Philadelphia here, there's a local college that offers an MBA degree in pharmaceutical marketing. And you say, gosh,
pretty specific.
How much more specific could you get, you know?
Well, so you're saying the education system is responding to employers' needs.
Yeah, but they're not going to do exactly what, I mean, they can't do what employers want or seem to be asking for now, and that is to produce people that you could hire immediately and not have to do any training or any ramp-up time. And again, employers are not after. The complaints are not about hiring college graduates. The complaints are They can't find people with 5 years' experience in the following field. So the short supply is really with respect to experience. The reason for that is nobody wants to train. We understand that's a complicated problem, but it's not something that the students could do anything about, and it's not something the colleges could do anything about.
Well, Professor Capelli, I wonder what kind of a reaction your book has gotten so far. It's pretty critical, again, of employers. Are the nation's major business groups no longer returning your calls?
I haven't heard from one of them, to be honest. But I think I don't want to suggest that employers are being evil here. It's not true. I don't want to suggest that they're bad guys. That's not true either. What they're doing, though, doesn't make sense for them. So, you know, I'm a business school professor, and so I'm arguing these are things that would make sense for you as an employer. These are things that quite likely would save you money and make for a more productive workforce. But in order to do that, you have to take hiring seriously and you have to take human resources seriously. And most companies, frankly, haven't been doing that.
Well, Professor Capelli, it's been good to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's Peter Capelli, professor of management at the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania, director of its Center for Human Resources. He's the author of the book we talked about, Why Good People Can't Get Jobs, The Skills Gap, and What Companies Can Do About It. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. The Exchange theme music was composed by Bob Lord. We're now on Facebook. You can become a fan of our Facebook page. You can learn more about The Exchange, upcoming shows, and get extra links and material. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoi, and tomorrow on The Exchange, riled up over religious freedom. Since the time of our founding, we've had